Blog Talk Radio.
Living Out Loud is hosted by Dr. Frieda Birnbaum, a research psychologist, psychoanalyst, and author of What Price Power, an in-depth study of professional women in a relationship. She is an expert on depression, women's issues, and attaining happiness. Dr. Birnbaum has been featured on Oprah 2020 and some of the biggest TV radio venues in the world. Now, without further ado, here's your host of Living Out Loud, Dr. Frieda Birnbaum.
Thank you very much. Today's show is going to be a very exciting one because it's about a psychic, a medium, who is fourth generation, and she can interpret color and energy. She's a travel psychic, a profiler, an author, a lecturer, and a Reiki practitioner. So her name is Linda Lauren, and we'd like to welcome her on the show.
Well, she's going to be calling in a few more minutes. She's going to call in about
Sorry,
5 minutes. But no, but you know, Frieda, some of the things that happen, you know, the people with the psychic abilities, maybe they can't even predict what's going to happen. Were you shocked about any events that occurred over the course of the last week or so in terms of what's going on in the world?
Horrible. I mean, what a question. It's just beyond belief what's going on with the terrorism. It's so surreal that it's hard to even hold on to that concept that people are being killed because of freedom of expression. Can you imagine? This is what our country is founded on. So where do we go from here? And should we have a fear? Are we in danger if we speak up? And what happened with these terrorists are that they're saying, no, you can't. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ryan.
No, do you feel it from your perspective that when physical terrorism actually occurs, that it actually can be effective in silencing people who normally would be speaking?
Well, if you could put yourself in their place, it would be something to reconsider. The threat of danger without the danger itself is enough to stop yourself from putting your life at risk. So this is something that we may have to change the way we interpret our freedom today. It's a new phenomenon that's happening right now in front of us.
How do you feel based on what you're seeing? Like, were you in the city when September 11th happened?
No, I was not. Actually, what did happen, my husband was driving into the city, and I called him and I said, did you hear a plane just went into a building? And now a second plane went in, and it's not a coincidence. He said, nah, it's probably nothing, and he kept driving in. And he told me all the traffic was going in the other way. Of course, he wasn't even thinking about it, but once he got in, there were police all over. He couldn't even leave the city. There was nowhere to go. There was such panic.
So was he trapped in for a little while?
He was trapped in overnight. He couldn't leave.
You tell me. So he's traveling there in the morning and trying to get there?
He's traveling there. I told him not to go, so of course that's why he did go. And then once he got there, he couldn't leave. You know, that's how it is. And he couldn't leave. There were traffic jams all over, policemen all over. And he had to sleep on the floor of my son's apartment, who was so thrilled that he had an apartment there, a studio, but there was nowhere to sleep, so he slept on the floor. And then my daughter, who was in the city, also slept there. So the three of them had to sleep in very tight quarters. This is what happened.
Wow,
so that's the least of it, of course, in comparison.
Now, from your perspective, if you look at the masses in America, do you feel that Americans are still traumatized by the events of September 11th? Do you think that there is a right way and a wrong way to respond mentally to external threats of physical danger, physical harm, which occur in the foundation of terrorism? And how would you feel that America's response is compared to the rest of the world and other countries?
Well, if you remember, at the time 9/11 happened, even businesses were vacating the city. People were moving out. And there were actually less pedestrians on the streets. I remember the cab driver was complaining to me that he's not getting the same amount of business as he used to get. So things changed, but then as time went on, the fear lessened and people moved back. And now, of course, it's continued to become much more normalized until something like this happens. But listen, you know, we've had a fear of many things since then. A fear of flying, who knows what could happen. A fear of being in public places now with the hackers. A fear now of speech, of being able to say what it is on your mind, who's going to misinterpret it. So it's becoming such that there is no place really to feel safe. I mean, even in your own homes nowadays, anything can happen. And then, of course, when you're on the cyberspace with all this information floating around, is that threatening you as well? So it has changed, escalated.
The basis of your show is this. It's called Live Out Loud. So, you know, if one was going to be living out loud in response to the threat of terrorism, what would you recommend to people?
I think that living out loud and responding to terrorism needs to be done, I hate to say this, in a calculated way. Because we're not dealing with someone who's rational. We're dealing with someone who's volatile and who's looking to have any kind of situation where he can have revenge. It's much better right now to take a back step, a low profile, and not to try to be part of this warfare between the terrorists. And this is what happens. The immediate response would be the best response. Till eventually we are able to combat what is going on around us.
Okay. And I'm trying to take things a little bit lighter, but this week you've been talking to the media about how men who take a lot of selfies or post a lot of selfie pictures have qualities of a psychopath. I wanted to know if you could possibly elaborate on that more, if there's why that would be relevant and why that would occur.
You know, we're so indulgent of our narcissistic qualities that men are sort of catching up to where women have been for years. Especially now with posting themselves on the web and on their singlematch.com sites, we're becoming more vain, not less vain. But, you know, it's related to an illness, because depression will come if you don't see yourself as perfect. And, you know, psychopathic qualities come in, repetitions, which means that you are objectify yourself, and that leads into eating disorders and addiction, believe it or not. You get addicted to something that you repeat often, even if it's not good for you. So it's very hard to stop. And there are ways to stop this through cognitive behavior, where it's difficult, but you have to do it step by step every day, take less pictures. I mean, there's some people who take, believe this or not, 200 pictures a day of themselves.
Wow.
To put on Facebook and all these other social media sites.
It's pretty crazy. And, Dr. Frieda, I want to bring your attention and the audience attention that we do have our guest today.
Oh, great.
Before we bring on Ms. Linda Lauren, I want to bring to everyone's attention that you can go to learn more about Dr. Frieda by going to her website at Frieda, FRIEDA.com, drfrieda.com. Now, Linda Lauren is a fourth-generation psychic medium. She specializes in psychic consulting. She does color readings. She analyzes dreams. She's been working with law enforcement since the 70s, helping them solve cases. She's the author of several books, and she brings an incredible amount of knowledge that most people probably aren't too aware of in terms of metaphysics. Without further ado, Ms. Birnbaum, Miss Lauren, are you there?
Yes, hello? I am. Hello.
Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Welcome to our show.
Oh, I'm doing well. Thank you. I was listening for a while there, and I'm happy to be a guest today. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, it sounds like a fun show with all your intrinsic knowledge here. So let's get started. And the first question I'd like to ask you is, how is this actually done? Do you have a visualization? Is it something, a thought that comes to you? What is the process like?
Basically, for me, I've known about this within myself because I'm fourth generation, for at least since I'm 3 years old. And I have always seen colors manifest out of people's mouths when they speak, almost like bubbles. Mm. So like a child, I mean, imagine a child blowing bubbles. Well, I would see colors as people were speaking, and I still do. And I just control it a little bit better. I don't stare at somebody, and like the little Linda would have done. Like, I was like amazed by these colors. But the colors told me a lot about what the person might have been feeling, what they might have been, looking forward to, what might be ahead for them. Just a little something. It gave me insight. And I would say to my mother, you know, Grandma doesn't feel good. My mother would say, why? And I would say something, well, I don't know. There's a lot of red coming out of her mouth. And after a while, I became very accustomed to learning what the colors meant, because everybody was different. And basically, I was picking up colors of the aura. And it just manifested right when people spoke, while they were speaking. And those colors I was able to discern a lot about what the person might need to know or what might be happening right then and there. And so basically, I'm about color and energy. I lead, even with the, those who have passed into spirit, it's all about color and energy. That's how I think
about
it.
Now, did you
say
that
your mother...
So all the senses
are there. Excuse me?
Now, Lynn, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I interrupted, but I did read that you said that your mother taught you how to do this?
Well, no, my mother nurtured that aspect into me. Basically, this runs on both sides of the family, but mostly more so on my father's side of the family. And his mother, my grandmother, used to be like the neighborhood council in back in the day. And she would, you know, people would maybe babysit her children. She'd give a reading, or she'd help heal someone, or she'd pray for them. But basically, she worked with my mom to teach me what colors meant, because they really didn't understand the colors, because that's not how it came to them. So they would have to go by what I was saying, and they would write these things down. Well, Linda is feeling a blue, the color blue for that person. Well, what does she say, that one or two words? And as I became more adept at understanding what the colors meant, I could elaborate on it. But as a child, I would know happy, sad versus sick or well, or versus, I mean, I could, you know, look at a dog and get a sense of what was going on with the dog just by the colors that would come at me. So my mother would start to keep a journal and help, that's okay, and help me with it. She would keep a journal so that I could keep a record as I got older, so I would understand.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to jump in and ask you this one question. You've only heard me speak for a little while, and I am interested in this because it has to do with feelings and colors and auras and energy. What do you pick up from my voice?
Okay, I will tell you this. I get a lot of brown and purple. And brown, for me, says that in your case, you're in a very grounded place, or moving towards a grounded place. So that means there's a lot that you have to work with to stay within that grounded place. However, the purple is all about your intuition. And in your case, it means that your best bet right now in life is to go by everything intuitively, like what's speaking to you the most, what do you feel is your first response. And I'm not so much speaking your gut response, because you're a little too grounded to go for the gut response, because that might make you emotional, because I get that you work with emotion and you're able to ground it, but that you have a very busy life. And so the intuition has to make a play right now. There is some black, and the black is never negative. It's always a void, and that means you're filling in a space with something more colorful, something more coming along the way that you didn't expect. So there is something new, and that could be possibly in the form of a lecture, a book, something moving you towards more of a public persona in terms of public speaking or teaching, something more widespread. So those three colors are very prominent right now around you.
Very good. You're very close. I mean, actually, that's pretty much what's going on in my life. you just confirmed
it. Hey, Linda.
It.
Linda and Frida, I'd like to ask you guys both a question, because Linda and Frida, you both work with people who pour out their hearts to you. They empty their minds and their deepest recesses, their emotions to you. And I want to ask you both, how do you both process with the excessive amount of emotions and sadness that you are being asked to help people work out? Does their sadness of the clients that you see kind of weigh on you, and how do you detach yourself from the sadness of the people that you sit down and listen to?
Frida, do you want to go first, or do you want me? It's up to you.
Go ahead, Linda. You can go first.
Okay. I for me, everything lies within meditation. And if I didn't meditate, which is the process of breathing and quieting the mind and being very mindful and just allowing yourself to let things come in and out as you breathe, let them not worry your mind, just express it. That's the way to filter out the sadness, filter out what you might be experiencing in terms of each client and their emotion. Now, remember, too, that in my case, I'm speaking to the dead. So spirit can be happy, spirit can be sad. Mostly, though, they're sad if you're sad. So it's a case of, well, how do I work with that sadness? I put my shields up. And I imagine imaginary shields around me, protecting me with mirrors out, reflecting negativity out back into the universe, so that I am not as drained. These are all creative visualization type of techniques that I use, but meditation is what bonds it together. The other thing that I would suggest, or that I would say I do, is I journalize. So I write out what I've experienced, if it was something that I really needed to express so I didn't carry it home, per se. And that's how I deal with it.
It's interesting. It's very helpful. In my area, in my field, where people actually sit and talk to me and tell me everything, so I don't have to second guess. It's very concrete. What I usually do, I think it's more obvious and probably easier in a way, because you have a special skill with what you're doing. And what I usually do is I would really reinterpret what they're telling me through their own point of view, and then through my point of view. So it's almost like a shield. So when they are telling me something, I'm able to project it in such a way that's much more tolerable, and it helps to heal both of us. Because, everyone has a little bit of everything that you hear. We're all in it together. And so I find it extremely healing for the patient that's coming in, and for the fact that I can see a difference each time. So mine is more, object-oriented. Mine is more action-oriented. And I identify with what it is they are telling me. So we become a unit. And that's how we progress, and that's how I can make the changes. But I wanted to get back to you a little bit more about your book. Tell us a little bit about your book.
Which one?
Why don't you pick it, since there's so many?
Okay, the one that's out right now is called Sentimental Journey. And Sentimental Journey is a time travel. It's an illustrated time travel. It has a lot of family pictures in it, and it's something that I dreamed and wrote when my mother was still alive. There's another book that my memoir is out. It's called Medium Rare. and it can be found on Amazon. And that basically tells you from when I was a child until some of the stories that, you know, rounded out my awareness up until now. And I try to teach as well as share. And then, you know, I'm working on a part two for that. But and I have a couple of time travels, and Medium Rare is my big one in terms of a memoir. So I
well,
want to reach a lot of people.
For sure.
Yeah.
You're very busy.
I like to teach, Rita. I like to teach. I like to make people aware. Because I have a lot of people where, I mean, I'll come in to their lives before they've had their children. Or when they've gotten married, before they've had their children, at the time that they, you know, if a parent or someone is ill, right down to the passing. So, I mean, I follow families. I have people who I would say I've been reading them for a decade. I don't get a real big, big, huge turnover at all. I have groups of people who have been coming to me. And that's what a lot of Medium Rare explains in terms of those generations, because I've had the pleasure to help people in a way that makes them understand death and also understands life and how they can work with this world while they're here, because that's more important. That's what your loved ones want.
Is there a way that you can... Brian, were you going to say something? Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that is there a way that if you're not a psychic, you can communicate with the dead, with the deceased relatives? Or
oh,
do you
of
need
course.
A psychic to do that?
No,
tell us
no, no,
about
no, no.
That.
You, no, and actually you need a medium for that, because a psychic, someone who's psychic, has the ability to tell you things or work with things that are now, happening now. They're not really talking to the other side in terms of bringing through the other side or bringing through someone who passed away in spirit. A medium just does that. They only communicate with the dead. That's it. They don't really cross that line. A psychic medium like myself will do both.
Yes.
So we'll work with both. Everyone has psychic ability to a certain extent. It just depends on whether you came into this world like I did with a twist, so to speak, and decided to develop it. That's the really big thing I find people fail at. They don't want to really sacrifice much to develop what they might have. So we all do have a certain amount of ability that we can create. And you always talk. If you pray, you're talking to spirits. So you can do what I could do if you were someone who meditated, gave your life a little more spiritual meaning in that regard, quieting your mind, really speaking your truth. Because a lot of people don't. They don't express their truth. They're you know, by the virtue of the law of attraction, they're going off a whole negative end. And they don't realize that that simply can happen just by turning on the news and making a negative comment. It's just you don't need that to create awareness. You'll create more awareness if you are allowing yourself to express a quiet, relaxed mind. That's when you get the most hits in terms of positive psychic things that might happen in your life, like that phone ringing and you knowing who it is, or getting a feeling and saying, "Ooh, I got a hunch about that. I'm going to do it." Everyone has that, but how far will we go to sacrifice what we need to live a life that encourages that? That's
so. Do you feel that? Do you feel, Linda, that the deceased relatives or friends can speak back to you?
Yeah,
I know you can speak to them. They can speak back. They can respond.
They can speak back to you. They come into you in dreams. And if you're, you know, those are visitations. If it's not about an illness or a way a person passed, you know, how they died. But if it's something like totally out of the ordinary, where they're talking to you, or you're experiencing a dream, and it's like, wow, they're not sick, they're well. That's a visitation, and they're communicating with you. And I encourage my clients to keep journals. Diaries, you know, about this, dream journals.
No, I think Ryan,
you
wanted
message.
To ask a question. I'm sorry, Linda. I don't know what happens with my phone. I always talk over people. But about the CEOs, is that
yeah,
what
it's about a question
say?
Because you said you have clients mm-hmm. that you've been working with for a long period of time, and I'm just curious that you work with a lot of CEOs and a lot of businesses, and I ask that because it seems kind of ironic that there's still somewhat of a stigma, I guess, in mainstream society where the, you know, psychics, they don't believe the psychics are not that, they're not as mainstream as you'd think they would like to be. Yet apparently a lot of CEOs consult psychics on a regular basis. I know our industry, there was many people. What do they ask you?
I actually have an entire marketing plan for CEOs that I use. I work with groups. I mean, they call me in. I work with a lot of advertising companies, a lot of Fortune 500 companies, and I go in there and I discuss advertising, marketing, color, energy, how they can work better with their team, and how they can work. They usually want to know, well, how can I work better for myself? I help them with time management. I focus on a lot of different things that intuitively speak to me when I meet them, or when they, have a meeting with me on what they need to change or what they want to focus on. So the questions are really all about how they can calm themselves down while making money and get along with people, because that's the biggest problem in the workforce is getting along right now. Everybody's on Facebook, everybody's on Twitter, everybody's on some form of social media, or they are texting away. So it's very hard to keep people focused on the task at hand. I help them through teaching meditation techniques, different ways that they can focus and learn to keep focus in terms of colors that would speak to them. And you'd be surprised at how open and mainstream my practice is, because it's like across the board. I'm a medium, I'm a psychic, I work with CEOs, I work with people in spirit, I work, it doesn't matter. It's all
fascinating.
Energy, and that's the way
it's
I look at it.
It's just, so informative. Even the way you interpreted me and the way you have this, insight into what to look for, forget about actually doing it, but the steps towards doing it, that's so complex, and your books, I'm sure, are extremely interesting and informative. Could you please tell us the names of all your books then, so I don't miss any of them?
Okay. The first one is a time travel that has a lot to do with a past life. It goes back to the 1800s. That's called Hostage in Time. Then there's A Sentimental Journey, which is out now, and that's the illustrated time travel. And then there's my memoir, Medium Rare, which is about my stories about my life and abilities.
And where can... Okay, that's
you can get them on
great.
Amazon.com. Yeah, you can get them on Amazon. You can get them through my site, MindyLauren.com. But Amazon, it's on Kindle and it's on paperback as well.
And your website is?
MindyLauren.com.
MindyLauren.com.
LAUREN. Yeah, like Ralph Lauren.
Thank you so much for being such a great guest on our show. We'd love to have you back.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank
My
you
pleasure.
So much. It was a pleasure. Okay. God bless.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Frida. Well, we were just about out of time. And you can learn more about Frida by going to her website at drfrida.com. And we will see you back here next week.
Living Out Loud is hosted by Dr. Frida Birnbaum, a research psychologist, psychoanalyst, and author of What Price Power? An In-Depth Study of Professional Women in a Relationship. She is an expert on depression, women's issues, and attaining happiness. Dr. Birnbaum has been featured on Oprah 2020 and some of the biggest TV radio venues in the world. Now, without further